Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Lance Meadow, John Schmelk with you, 201-939-4513. That's the way for you to call us and give us a ring and give us your take on the New York Football Giants and the National Football League, or hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We'll be monitoring that channel throughout the program. We'll do a lot of that in the offseason, folks, as our calls, the volume goes down a little bit. We still get plenty of them, but we'll obviously go to Twitter a lot more in the offseason. So let us know what you're thinking. And obviously, Lance, a very busy divisional playoff weekend, the best weekend of football of the year, always in my opinion. You get four games that are usually with the eight best teams left remaining in the league playing them. So it's a lot of fun. Let's go through them a little bit. Let's start with Saturday's games. Obviously, those are not the main attractions when all was said and done. Not the most exciting contest. But we'll start the early game, and to me, that was not a surprise. That Falcons-Seahawks contest. We talked about it a lot during the season. The Seahawks simply were not the same team this year, and they were beset by issues in the secondary once Earl Thomas went out. We saw that again. And offensively, the offensive line just didn't do a good enough job clearing room for Thomas Rawls or protecting Russell Wilson.
Yeah, they couldn't establish the run game in that contest. I also think they had some self-inflicted wounds. You referred to special teams. Devin Hester had a big return. What happens?
More than one
call.
Big,
but the specific one, yeah. The one that went nearly 80 yards, gets negated by a holding call. And then what happens on the very next play? Russell Wilson is sacked in the end zone for a safety. So that was a huge momentum turner.
Got stepped on by his own guard, who, by the way,
the right guard went down. And they had to go to the backup.
You got it.
So that's what happens when you have to shuffle personnel during the course of a contest. Other teams clearly dealing with certain circumstances that the Giants had to contend with this season. And then on top of that, Russell Wilson had multiple opportunities to hit Doug Baldwin for touchdowns throughout the course of that game. And a number of the throws were off the mark, and they just weren't able to capitalize. So, you know, those are some of the things that really plagued Seattle. But Atlanta's offense has been money all season long. They were the number one scoring offense in the NFL. I'm not surprised. It doesn't matter what defense they've gone up against. They've consistently put up about 30 points a game.
And not surprising, to me at least, was the fact that the Falcons are able to move the ball. And they did it by being balanced.
Yeah.
Once again, over 400 yards of offense. Matt Ryan threw for 338 yards. He completed passes to 8 different wide receivers, threw passes to 10 different wide receivers. Very efficient. 125 quarterback rating. 3 touchdowns. No interceptions. And then their running backs combined for 99 yards. 57 for Tevin Coleman. 45 for Devontae Freeman. That's what you mean when you talk about balance.
And they did a lot of damage as receivers, too. Tevin Coleman caught a touchdown. Devontae Freeman was involved in the passing game. That's what makes them so versatile. And they were able to move the ball efficiently, I think, through a variety of different ways. And Atlanta has been able to showcase that throughout the course of the season. But, you know, when they're so off balance in terms of, you don't know, are they using the running backs as receivers or running backs? It keeps the defense on its toes. And I thought that Matt Ryan and company did that very effectively. And it's interesting, you threw out the fact that he involved 10 different receivers in terms of targets, 8 that caught passes. Matt Ryan also set a new NFL record this season where he threw touchdown passes to 13 different receivers, whether it be tight ends, running backs, wide receivers.
It's
they
good number.
Spread the wealth, and they've translated that over to the postseason. That's what you want. The way you play in the regular season is the way you want to do that in the postseason. Atlanta is probably the perfect poster child for that case.
And 0 turnovers, I think, for the Falcons in that game as well. Obviously a big difference maker. Now, the night game on Saturday, we can talk about that game, folks, too. The Texans did as good of a job as you could have imagined. Their defense did their damnedest to keep them in that game. They played well. They rushed the passer. Tom Brady was very uncomfortable for much of that game. He did not have a vintage Tom Brady playoff performance, but as expected, the Texan offense simply could not do enough. They settled for field goals way too much in the first half when they were an opportunity in Patriot territory to do some damage. And they're going to have to figure out what to do with that quarterback position, because every other part of that team, Lance, to me, is Super Bowl caliber. From the line to the running back, you have DeAndre Hopkins. The defense was phenomenal against New England. They just have to figure out that quarterback situation. Until they do, they're going to be coming up short against some of the better teams in the postseason.
The positive for them is that division is basically wide open. So even if you have quarterback issues, you can at least overcome that. Even with Andrew Luck being the probably most consistent option under center in that division, I still think with the way their defense is performing, they're going to be competitive. But as you mentioned, Brock Osweiler, 3 interceptions. They were plagued by turnovers. You know, that was a game where Houston, to me, was in striking distance. You got Tom Brady to throw 2 interceptions. They were off deflected balls. Hey, you'll take it however you can get it.
Yeah.
But the problem is, you then have to then go back the other way and capitalize, and they couldn't do that. I mean, even though it was a 24-16 game, from seeing that contest, you never felt that Houston was going to get that game-changing play that was going to put New England with its back against the wall. And part of that is because even with Brady not having his best game, even though he did throw two touchdowns, is this is the way New England operates, and we've seen this season in and season out, John. Bill Belichick will take a random player, and he'll be like, you know, based on matchups, this is the game we're going to highlight him. Deion Lewis had been hurt the entire season. He came on late, and this was Deion Lewis's coming out party. He has three touchdowns, one receiving, one rushing, and a special teams. And that's what the Patriots do so well. They maximize the value of everyone on their roster, and it may not be a guy that had a prominent role in the weeks prior.
And you know what? We might not see Deion Lewis again after the
Correct.
Game. That's
what I'm
postseason.
Saying. I wouldn't be surprised if he plays no role moving forward.
You're absolutely right. They have James White there you mentioned. You have LeGarrette Blount, obviously, who might, depending on matchups, play a big role later in the year. So it's just the masterful skills of Brady and Belichick and, you know, Josh McDaniels and everybody else to get those matchups they liked. They love getting those bigger Texan linebackers into those one-on-one matchups with the running backs in that game. They challenge them down the field. And really, that was the difference. I mean, the Patriots only had 370 yards of offense.
Yeah.
The problem is that the Texans only had 285, and they simply did not do enough offensively, which really should come as no surprise. And I'm not sure what their salary cap situation is, Lance, but, you know, people have talked about, you know, targets for potentially Tony Romo this offseason. The Broncos have said they're not interested. I don't know what the Texans' salary cap deal is, if they can afford to bring on that type of contract, because you are going to have to dedicate more than $15 million a year cap, and look what they paid Brock Osweiler already. Yeah. I get all that. But if you put Tony Romo on the Texans, that team is a Super Bowl contender next year. No question about it, if Romo can stay healthy.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think Romo would be a nice fit. Plus, he's got the running game with Lamar Miller.
Stays in Texas.
Correct. He doesn't have to move that far. I'm sure the family would appreciate that. But when you take into consideration Brock Osweiler's cap hit, if you were to just let him go, because they just gave him some big-time guaranteed money, at least on the front end of the contract. And remember, you know, they haven't given DeAndre Hopkins a long-term deal yet, so they have to worry about wrapping him up, and they just put J.J. Watt on the books for a couple of years. So do you really want to take the hit with the quarterback, bring in another quarterback? DeAndre Hopkins you got to worry about. I don't think it's so simple you just remove Brock and you bring in Tony Romo. There's a lot of finances that are in play.
Well, like I said, it all depends if they can work it out salary cap.
Oh, no doubt.
That's
I mean,
the trick.
Listen, on paper it's great, but unfortunately on paper it doesn't necessarily work out too well in the NFL.
And that was one of the things that Ian Rappaport and Adam Schefter said over the weekend, too, that moving Romo is going to be a lot harder than some people have made it out to be because of the size of that contract and the salary cap space that's going to be necessary for a team to bring him
up. Well, and that's why, and I saw the reports that you saw with respect to the Broncos, but Denver, it's much more manageable. Trevor Siemian's on a rookie contract.
Right.
You don't have to do a lot of moving around with respect to that.
They have spent a lot of money on defense, though.
They have. But you don't have to worry about having so much money locked up in that position that you want to improve.
Absolutely. Folks, if you're watching on Twitter, thanks so much for joining us. If you want to watch the rest of the show, we'll touch on the Sunday games and get to the Giants. Go to Giants.com or the Giants mobile app. You can watch and listen to the rest of Big Blue Kickoff Live right there. All right, Lance, let's go on to Sunday, and this really ended up being the main course of the football weekend, and really it was a reprieve from what had been not a great first six games of the playoffs so far. Yeah. And, boy, the Cowboys and Packers really, really gave you 3.5 hours of entertaining football. And to me, and we actually saw this, too, on Saturday and in the late game on Sunday to a certain extent, the teams coming off the bye did not start these games quickly. You know, the Falcons were down early in that game, 10-3, right, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, they scored on their first possession.
A field goal.
They did respond.
It was a field goal, right?
I thought they marched down and got a touchdown.
The Seahawks did have a lead in the first quarter.
The Seahawks had a 7-0 lead. They marched down, but I believe Atlanta responded with a touchdown. I mean, it wasn't necessarily – what I think was surprising about Atlanta was the fact that they didn't take the ball when they won the coin toss.
Well, the Falcons are up 7-0 there in that first quarter.
Okay,
so the Falcons did not score in the first quarter of that game. They started slow. The Patriots, they did go up 14-3 in the first quarter.
Yeah.
But again, then the Texans, it was a 4-point game at the half. And then I think what really got the Cowboys is that they simply – did not look like they were ready to play, especially on defense in the first quarter of that game.
Certainly.
And then offensively, they were in positions to score some points in that first quarter, and then their own self-inflicted mistakes. And everyone talks about what happened at the end of the game with the great play by Aaron Rodgers. Some people complain about officiating. Throw all that away. To me, Lance, that game was decided in the first quarter when the Cowboys extended two Packer drives with foolish penalties. and they let him continue their drives. And then they had that ridiculous unsportsmanlike conduct on a very simple substitution play, which is absolutely the right call. That cost them a drive that where they would have at least gotten a field goal, if not a touchdown. And then Terrence Williams had a drop pass in that game. Just
Bryce Butler had a drop pass in the end zone.
Right, absolutely, on a deep pass that could have been for a touchdown. And when you look at these games, and this is the point that I kind of want to take out of this game that I can apply to the Giants. If you want to win in the playoffs, it's not good enough to be the better team. You have to play well. And I think once you got into that game all around, I don't think many people would argue the Cowboys are the better overall team than the Packers, but that doesn't matter. The same way I would argue, I think as an overall team, I think the Giants have a more talented overall team than the Packers do. But guess what? The Packers played better than the Giants last week, and the Packers played better than the Cowboys did on Sunday. They made fewer mistakes. They made a couple more big plays. And that's the difference in the game when you have teams that are very closely matched up in the playoffs.
Well, and I think it also goes back to what I was talking about with respect to Atlanta. The things you do in the regular season, do they show up in the postseason? And the things that the Cowboys did in the regular season, even though they did come back, did not show up in the postseason. And here's another thing I'll add to the laundry list of things you laid out. I thought they got away from the running game early. You know, you had
a lot
of short yardage.
No,
but I'm talking about that first drive when they had to settle for a field goal. There's a short yardage situation.
On that third and two, I would have actually ran it twice. Even if you don't get it on first, third down, you run for it on
fourth. Yeah, arguably the best rushing attack in the NFL, the best offensive line. Zeke is a monster based on what he did in the rookie year. Then you're running with him, and you take it out of your rookie quarterback's hands. So I thought some of those decisions were a little uncharacteristic of what the Cowboys had done in the regular season, and I thought the way their defense played was uncharacteristic.
They gave up big plays, something they haven't done all
they
year.
They have not. You know, a lot of people are going to go back, and they're going to watch this game, and they're going to say, oh, well, you know, Dallas's defense was never good. I would disagree. I think if you look at the numbers this season, I think they exceeded expectations. I think they're probably a surprise element of the Dallas Cowboys team this year, but the true colors of the Cowboys' defense was nowhere to be found in this contest. I mean, they were beat up every which way.
Unfortunately, you got hints of this in their games earlier in the year. When this Cowboys team did play better offenses, go back to that Steeler game, go back to
more
the Redskins game
shootout
on Thanksgiving. Those were two games where you're playing some of the top offenses in the league, like the Green Bay Packers, where this Cowboy defense did not look like they did in other games over the course of the year. So I think depending on the matchup, this Cowboy defense did have issues. They settled down a little bit in the second half, did a better job.
Pass rush, too, heated up late in the season.
They did, but they did allow way too many points. And you talk about what a team did during the season. Some of the things this Cowboy team you're worried about during the season, could their defense hold up in big spots? They did not in the playoffs. That did not work out. And the other thing you worry about is if you got behind, could you come back and win a game? That, I think, was proven that they could, because Dak Prescott did end up throwing for 300-plus yards, came back, but they just couldn't get the stops at the end. So I think the lesson you take from that Packer-Cowboy game is that when it's a close game, every play and decision you make over the course of the game matters. And, yeah, that Aaron Rodgers throw was unbelievable, but from a defensive perspective, you have a team 3rd and 20 on their own 30-yard line.
If you give up 10 yards, you go to overtime.
You give up 20 yards, you go to overtime.
I mean, it's unreal.
You just can't give up 35.
Okay. The worst possible scenario.
But they did. And those are the types of mistakes that are going to kill you in the playoffs. Every mistake you make could wind up in a win or a loss. And I think you saw that in the late game with the Chiefs and the Steelers as well. You know, the Steelers could not get the ball in the end zone. The Chiefs had one of the best red zone defenses in football all year. That continued against the Steelers. They had to force them into a lot of field goals. And they just couldn't make that big play offensively. And really, that's been the hit on the Chiefs and Alex Smith over the past 3 years or so. Where, Lance, they're a good, solid football team, but they just can't score enough points when they need to in the playoffs through the air. And to me, that reared its ugly head once again.
Yeah, they had been scoring at a nice rate during the course of the regular season. I also thought this was the first year in a while where we saw they actually allowed Alex Smith to open up and spread his wings, so to say,
throw
in terms
to Kelsey,
of correct outside
to
the numbers. And we had seen that. We had seen flashes of that. That did not happen in the playoff game. They also had some turnovers. Alex Smith is a guy who usually protects the football.
How about the Kelsey drop in the middle of the field,
too? That was big, too. Ooh. Then you had him getting out of character and picking up the unsportsmanlike conduct, unnecessary roughness, excuse me, but it still was a personal foul. And, you know, that took them out of field goal range. They recovered. They got the field goal. But, you know, things like that add up, and that's why you settle for 3 points as opposed to 7 points. And then, of course, the holding call on the 2-point conversion.
You know, by the way, was a good call, by the way.
Well, Andy Reid disagrees, but I'm not going to say that he's coming from a perspective where clearly he's frustrated. Yeah, it was. He had James Harrison around the neck.
Harrison beat him. He grabbed him from behind and pushed him to the ground.
That's a textbook holding call. I really don't think that anybody who's unbiased would disagree with that standpoint. But, you know, Kansas City had plenty of opportunities early in the game to at least take control of the game. And, you know, another thing that I don't think really showed up, I know they made a lot of field goals, but, you know, Tyreek Hill, to me, was such an X factor for the Chiefs during the regular season. Specifically on special teams. And I said to myself before this game, I said, I have a funny feeling special teams is going to dictate the tone of this contest. And, I mean, believe it or not, it did with all the field goals, but field position benefited the Steelers a lot more than it did the Chiefs in this contest.
All right, 201-939-4513. We can talk divisional weekend, anything with the Giants. Let's get to it. Wonder from UltimateNewYorkGiants.com. He's up first. Wonder, what's going on?
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
How are you, Wonder?
Doing well. How about yourself?
Good, good, good. So, some of the football was great this weekend, there's no doubt about it. But I called specifically because Ultimate New York Giant had posted an article predicated on the fact that there seems to be a distinct lack of coaching nowadays in the NFL. And specifically, we were referring to the offensive line vis-a-vis the Giants. And apparently John had taken some exception, or maybe that's too strong a word.
Yeah, I think that – Wonder. Wonder texted or tweeted me over the weekend and linked me to the article they had up on the website, and he wanted me to take a look at it. And Wonder, correct me if my impression of the article was wrong. The impression and the point the article was trying to make was that you don't need to have really talented guys on the offensive line in order to win in the NFL. As long as you have good enough coaches, you can produce offensive linemen.
Within reason. And there are several organizations that seem to have taken this tack, some successfully, some unsuccessfully. For example, I would attribute the demise of the Seattle Seahawks almost completely to the fact that they lost their identity as an overpowering physical presence, both offensively and defensively.
Well, they lost personnel.
Well, Wonder, that's the thing.
Beast mode. I'm talking about losing Max Unger and the entire offensive line.
Correct.
Where Russell Wilson is running for his life.
Well, Wonder, right, and I think that's the point, though, in that they have the same offensive line coach. The players changed. So if your players aren't as good, you're not going to be able to succeed.
You're absolutely right. You need a base kind of offensive line. But what has happened is you take a look at the Patriots' offensive line and the changes over the last, let's say, handful of years, mm-hmm. right? When Scarnecchia retired, Brady got the bleep beat out of him for a couple of years. And what really happened was after the Broncos and specifically Von Miller beat them like a drum last year, in Denver, they said, look, please, can you come back here? Can you come back here and coach? Now, there aren't very many. You can go back to Alex Gibb or Joe Bugle. There are some great offensive line coaches. But if you look at a guy that I don't know if you've ever read our Ultimate New York Giant draft analysis and things of that nature. I did all the stuff from 2010 to 2012, and I talk about guys like Marcus Cannon, who at that point was ill. He actually had cancer, unfortunately. But I said, someone is going to draft this guy, and someone's going to turn him into a beast, right? And the Patriots picked him up in the fifth round, right?
Okay.
Now, he wasn't anything special last year. This year, he became basically a stud right tackle. Why? because of offensive line coaching. It's a totally underrated part.
Well,
of
the other factor, though, about Marcus Cannon here, Wonder, that I want to jump in on.
You can't practice and you can't hit.
Well, Wonder, the other thing that I'll add about Marcus Cannon is, remember, he was moved around in terms of his position on the offensive line early in his career because of the injuries that they suffered. They moved him around at tackle and so forth. So this is the first season that you can make the point where there's actually stability in where they were putting him on the offensive line. And I could say that about a lot of offensive linemen. When you give a guy one position and he gains continuity there, yeah, he's probably going to flourish. Case in point, Justin Pugh was moved around early in his career. Then he settles in at guard, and there's a lot more comfort there. So that's the other thing that you can't overlook with Marcus Cannon.
And the other thing I want to point out, too, Wonder, real quickly, is that you talk about how great the Patriot offensive line was this year. I mean, the Texans beat them up over the weekend, too. I mean, you realize that, right?
Relative to last year, number one, they definitely played better.
Oh, sure, they
did. Number
no
two,
argument.
If you look at, quote, the Texans beating them up, okay, how many times did they really get a free run at Brady?
More than we've seen a lot of teams get over the past couple years. But I want to bring this back to the Giants here for a second, Wonder. Here's the problem I have with the argument, okay? All I heard last year from a lot of callers was what a bad job Pat Flaherty did, and how they had to make a change at offensive line coach. Then they make the change at offensive line coach. You want to argue things didn't get better. You want to argue things got worse, a little bit better, whatever you want to argue. The change wasn't really that severe. So you did change offensive line coaches.
They brought in a has-been. They brought in a guy
has-been.
Who basically is just an NFL lifer.
I would go back and look at what he did for San Francisco, Wonder.
He's just a guy.
I'd go back and look at what he did for the San Francisco 49ers.
They had one of the best offensive line units in the league when he was there.
Right, and if you also look at my draft board, you will see that Iapati was rated in my top 10.
Yeah,
he's
so
a free agent, though.
It comes back to players, Wonder. That's the point. You're going back to these players, and they're good. That's why these guys have success. You could have the best coach in the world. If the player's not willing to dedicate himself to becoming a better player or isn't talented enough to become a very good player, it's not going to matter. Let me wonder. I don't care if you had the genetic combination of Bill Callahan, Russ Grimm, and Joe Bugle in here. James Brewer was not going to be a starting left tackle in the NFL. It just, trust me, I'm in the building. It was not going to happen.
No, that you're absolutely right. You need a base amount of talent. But there's such parity in the NFL that it is so key to maximize that unit's potential. And the Giants haven't maximized their potential in years and years.
Yeah, but how do you know that?
By drafting badly and or by bad coaching.
No, but Wonder, how do you know it's bad coaching and not the player simply not being good enough? How do you know that? I don't know that. How do you know that?
What you're basically saying is that Jerry Reese and their scouting department should have been fired years ago. Because let me ask you, the last time the Giants drafted what you would deem to be an excellent offensive lineman.
Well, what define excellent? I mean, what does excellent mean? I mean, Weston Richburg, I think, is a very good offensive lineman, and he's still young.
So is Pugh.
So, what is excellent mean,
Let me ask
though?
You a question. They're both reasonable, okay offensive linemen. You certainly wouldn't classify them as a beast, correct?
I mean, just look, Weston Richburg last year, I thought, had a better year than he had this season.
That's
for
fair.
One.
Yeah.
And if you want to look at just at this year's numbers, just to give you an example, and I realize you take all their ratings with a grain of salt, but we don't have any,
a serious grain of salt.
We don't have any stats or analytics to judge performances of individual offensive linemen. So they had Justin Pugh was a top 10 offensive guard, or top 12 offensive guard, excuse me, rated by Pro Football Focus this year. So I don't know what you consider great or excellent, whether or not you want to, however you want to take that. I just think you have to – I think you're jumping to conclusions. I think everything is a combination of coaches and players.
What? We've been around the game long enough to look at the eye test. I don't care that Scherf was, quote, an all-pro this year. Anybody who thinks that Scherf played at an all-pro level doesn't know football. You know that. I know that. Everybody watches the Washington Redskins knows that.
Well, in okay? fairness, I haven't sat there and broken down Brandon Scherff's tape. I don't know the answer to that question.
Okay, well, I have broken down tape on a ton of these guys, both coming out of college.
I don't care what they did in college. We're talking about what they did in the pros.
And what I'm saying to you is you rattled off some names, Bugle, Grimm, okay, so on and so forth. The point is, in today's NFL, you're right. You have to have some talent. But the parity is such, and with the new CBA, you have a limitation on hitting. You have a limitation on what you can do and what you can coach. But doesn't it strike you as unbelievably coincidental that New England, year after year after year, from 2001 on, just changes their offensive line year to year and plugs in guys,
well, Wonder,
and they become serviceable and okay.
Well, wait, you just said excellent, though, and now you're going from excellent offensive linemen to serviceable.
And by the way, halfway
line.
Through last year,
Wonder, hold on. Group, they've been excellent.
No wonder. Halfway through last year, Tom Brady was basically battered and bruised, yeah. And they had to change their completely offensive line mid-season.
Last year, they had 39 line combinations.
Right, yeah, exactly.
It was a game in musical chairs.
Offensive line coach. As soon as the year ended, Belichick fired the guy, got on the phone, and begged Sarnecchia, who's, I don't know, 75 or however old he is, begged him, please come out of retirement. Tom Brady cannot, at 38, going on 39, cannot take this pounding anymore. You're exactly right.
Yeah, but Wonder, the offensive lineman, but the offensive lineman got healthy this year for New England as well. You're crediting the coach without taking into consideration the personnel getting healthy.
Do you know who their offensive linemen are this year?
Yeah.
Do you know who their –
I told you that Marcus Cannon was moved around and banged up last season. I said that. And Nate Solder.
And who are their other offensive linemen? The only guy that most people know on that offensive line is Nate Solder.
Yeah, Nate Solder, exactly, who I just said.
Name the other offensive linemen.
Well, their other offensive linemen are not household names, but what the point is that they were banged up last year. That's my point. And that you had more continuity and health in their favor this year. And that's another big reason why the Patriots' offensive line has performed better.
No, but Wonder, the point of Wonder.
They have 39 offensive line combinations this
nobodies.
Season.
Nobodies. They have undrafted guys. They have third and fourth round guys.
Wonder.
Jack Mason was a fourth rounder
Wonder,
last
you
year.
Also, you also have used one organization as an example. Notice. You've pointed to is,
no.
Which is the Mono
let's
franchise,
go back
which
to
is
Denver.
The New Denver, okay. Did the Broncos not make some free agent acquisitions this offseason on the offensive line?
No, did they not? I want to go back many years ago.
Well,
before they changed the rules on cutback blocks, everyone in the NFL complained about the Broncos offensive line and their, quote, I don't know, dangerous way that they ran their zone blocking reads in terms of cutback blocks. Do you remember that?
What's your point, though?
Well, yeah, I don't understand where we're going with this.
Under the rules, what the Broncos coaches did was they maximized their ability. They taught him a technique, which at the time was legal, and it really didn't matter what running back they stuck back there, whether it was the old Anderson or Terrell Davis. They were good for 1,000-plus yards in their sleep.
Okay.
It didn't matter.
Okay, time out. Let's talk about something that didn't happen 15 years ago. Let's talk about something that happened from 2015 to the 2016 season. Would you consider the Giants' 2015 offensive line, the year they won the Super Bowl, to be pretty good?
2011.
Is that what you meant?
No, the year the Broncos won the Super
Bowl
with Peyton Manning.
The Broncos.
Their offensive line was good but not great.
Okay, what do you think of their offensive line this year? You watch all this tape. What do you think of it?
It's not great.
Okay, I agree 100%.
Yeah.
It's in fact
no
it was
game.
It was bad. Okay, let me ask you, what changed from 2015 to 2016 on the Broncos' offensive line?
a multiple number of things.
Yeah, they brought in Russell Okung, by the way.
Right, and by the way, I believe the offensive line coach stayed the same.
Yeah.
But so they, what happens when you take the same offensive line coach, but you remove guys like Vasquez, and you have a new tackle in Okung that didn't play well, and you change all the personnel? Guess what? The line gets bad because the players got worse.
Okung's big problem was he was injured and had gotten old overnight.
Right, exactly, but he's worse than Ryan Clay.
Did I not say that about New England? You know, what I love about you is you keep using the same excuses with other teams that I've been bringing up with respect to New England, and now it's okay to use it for Denver, but it's inconvenient to use it for New England.
No, but and here's the point.
The biggest problem with Denver this year was part of the offensive line is the quarterback. You cannot fail
the
quarterback working with the center, calling out the protections, and even though he couldn't throw the ball to break a door or a pane of glass, Peyton Manning still understood formations last year. Okay? So that's a big part of the offense.
Okay, timeout. I want to bring this back to the Giants because then we got to go. We've already had you on for like 13 minutes, okay? Bottom line, what do you want the Giants to do?
First of all, I want them to get a guy who's not a retread at offensive line.
Secondly, timeout. What does that mean?
To establish an identity. They do not have an identity. Okay, in 1986, when they won the Super Bowl, all right, they had Little Joe and they pounded the rock behind Carl Nelson and those boys.
Okay, so you want to bring in a first?
In 2007, they won the Super Bowl. They had an identity.
And they had really good players.
Jacobs and
Bradshaw.
Oh, my God.
Bradshaw.
And Bradshaw, okay? Nice. They have no identity right now. Now, I will tell you pre-draft that I loved Paul Perkins coming out of the draft.
And he looked very good at the end of the year.
And I strongly advocated his drafting. Okay, and if you would put Paul Perkins behind the Cowboys line, he would have ran for over 1,200 yards, guaranteed.
Okay, that's fine.
All right, what the Giants do is, besides keep moving guys around, is you can say, I mean, look, everybody's whipping boy, okay, is Eric. Everybody's whipping boy is Flowers. Would you agree with that?
No argument.
Okay, I promise you that if he had been drafted by the Patriots and he had been taught technique.
Wait, time out. This is where we're going to stop.
He wouldn't be a stud.
I sat there at practice for two straight training camps. I sat at practice and I watched whether it was Pat Flaherty or it was Mike Solari sit there and tell Eric Flowers and show him how to properly use his hands, how to get him inside, and how to punch. Do you know what Eric Flowers did? He didn't listen to them. So I can guarantee you, because I've seen it with my eyes and with my ears, I've seen it. They're teaching him the technique. It's being taught. I don't know what else you want the coaches to do. Wonder, we got to run, okay?
All right, guys.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Take a look at ultimatenyg.com.
All right, Wonder.
You can see all our analysis on the draft.
Thank you, buddy.
Appreciate the phone call.
Appreciate it.
You know, he mentioned retread as offensive line coach. How about Bill Callahan? Bill Callahan's been with a number of different teams over the last few seasons. He coached one of the best offensive lines in the current NFL, the Dallas Cowboys. Mm-hmm. He helped improve the Washington Redskins offensive line. He was with the Jets. That's the definition of retread, too. Coaches get circulated throughout the NFL. That doesn't mean that they're bad coaches, though.
Correct.
So I don't buy the argument. He said he doesn't want to retread, so you want to bring in what? A 25-year-old who's fresh out of college?
You want to bring in a guy that's never coached a position and then have him create an identity.
You know, I mean, come on. There's a difference between bringing up a point and then common sense.
And look, if you want to say that the issues in the offensive line is a combination of, you know, front office, coaching, and player, and it's all of them together, yeah, absolutely you can make that argument. No question about it. You don't want to just point the blame at one thing. Everyone plays a role in this.
You can say that for most teams in the NFL.
Absolutely. But to say the only problem the Giants have is that the offensive lineman's not being coached right, and you have the right coach in here, then all the problems will go away, that's crazy. It's crazy.
Because there's plenty of teams that go against that trend that we've seen, where they change personnel, they change coaches, and the results are similar.
I don't care what position it is, what team you're in, what sport you're in. You could have the best coach in the history of mankind. If you don't have the right players for that guy to coach, it ain't going to matter. The coach isn't out there making the block. He's not out there making the tackle. You need the player to do what he's taught and do what he's coached and, frankly, be physically gifted enough to do it. All those things together. You can't just say that it's all the coach's fault and that's it. That's not fair. It's not fair.
Look at the Knicks as another example. They've changed coaches a lot. They've changed personnel.
I hate you.
Similar results.
I hate you.
That's a good transition on this program. Let's go back to the lines.
201-939-4513. Let's go to Maurice in Montclair.
Oh,
hi, Maurice.
John, quiet
how are you?
A little bit. How about that?
What's going on, gentlemen? How you doing?
Sorry for making you wait so long, Maurice.
Nah, it's all good. I have to agree with my man that was just online. But let me ask you something, John. Like, what was Eric Flowers' major decline about? Because, I mean, I think you would agree that last year he looked a little better than this year.
No, honestly, I don't think he did. I think last year people recognized they didn't play that well, but I think they thought it was his ankle and the injury that forced him to play poorly. And we saw that that probably wasn't the reason why he played poorly. I think he struggled his rookie year. You want to look at the Pro Football Focus ratings. He was ranked just as poorly in year one as he was in year number two. So I think last year a lot of his problems were hidden and masked by other things. But frankly, I think he had the same technique issues this year. In fact, I think his technique actually got a little bit better this year than it was last year. I don't think he really took that big of a step back, in my humble opinion.
Okay, well, I'm going to tell you how I feel. I'm going to just run a few things off to you.
Go ahead.
I feel like Eric Flowers is not the left tackle for the New York Giants. All right, because at this stage of Eli's career, he can't protect him. That's just obvious. My second point is, what I don't want the Giants to do is just start to neglect the defense as far as the defense being good this year, because obviously they did that last year in the offseason, said, oh, well, the offense scored six in the league and scoring and all that type of jazz and missed the same offensive line. The offensive line stinks, gentlemen. Like, I think we all can agree on that. All right? And I think the Giants need to look for some type of veteran, because I don't think Eli can survive going to some of the growing pains of a young rookie left tackle, if you ask me. I think if they want – because the window's closed, and I think if they want to win now, they have to get rid of Newhouse and John Jerry. Like, that's over. Would you guys agree with me?
I don't think John – I think John Jerry's pass protection is fine.
Yeah.
I think he can use a – have a little
– Nah,
you know,
I don't agree with that.
Well, I can tell you, John Jerry gave up one sack all year. Those are facts.
Is Eli the most hurried quarterback in the NFL? One of them.
I don't know if there's a way to quantify that stat.
Yeah, I don't know that off the top of my head, but I will tell you that he certainly wasn't the most sack quarterback in the NFL.
Passes did he throw in the dirt? How many passes did Eli throw in the dirt?
Well, I don't have those numbers.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't necessarily tally those numbers. I mean, that's more of a matter of an eye test, but I would say that there's been plenty of times, too, where Eli Manning did have time to throw the football down the field, and it wasn't necessarily because of the offensive
line. Now,
Maurice, it's just mixed results.
If you want to get on the interior,
Hold on real quick. Before we jump on Eli's back, I think, with much respect, I think this team needs to provide Eli with some of the weapons and some of the offensive line and running game and tight end, and then let's discuss Eli to see if he's declining, because obviously Eli's not the problem.
Well, but Maurice, nobody's saying
he's
that Eli Manning is the problem. I mean, if you go back to the playoff game against the Packers, he's a big reason why they had an opportunity to be competitive in the first half, and the guys around him didn't necessarily execute. So I mean, nobody's pinning this on Eli Manning.
What's been the Achilles heel all season? I mean, you guys used to jump on – y'all used to jump on I forget the caller's name. I used to always harass the offensive line. But he was right. It stinks.
Maurice, we've been talking about how they have to improve at offensive tackle.
I mean, do you think the Giants need a wholesale change at offensive line?
Well, define wholesale.
Yeah, I mean, they're not changing all five guys.
Well, they need to move Eric Flowers possibly, because I don't think if they're just going to give up on him. They obviously need to get rid of Newhouse and John Jerry, and you can leave Pugh
and Richburg.
Eric Flowers shouldn't be given nothing. I think they should bring in some talent here and make this kid compete, yo, because he's really he's making a case for one of the worst, you know, offensive linemen around here in the league.
We agree,
you know what I mean?
Maurice, we agree. Eric Flowers should face some competition. There's no question about that.
But look, I'm gonna just say this, guys. Like at the end of it, like, yo, if the Giants want to get a championship in this little window that Eli has left, like, they have to address the O-line. And last year, it was just like ignored. Like, I don't know why they thought that this line was good, because the offense was had the sixth most scoring percentage in the league or something like that. Like,
Maurice,
I mean, like,
look, Maurice, in retrospect, you're absolutely right. If Jerry Reese could get in a DeLorean and go back to the offseason last year, he probably would have done something different on the offensive line. I don't know that for sure, but that would be my guess. And look, if next year the Giants have two new starting offensive linemen that weren't on the roster this year, that wouldn't shock me. It wouldn't shock me.
Okay, now let me ask you this. Do you see the Green Bay Packers game in the playoffs with the Giants? Like, you seen how that play where they had two people – obviously, defending Beckham. What do you think about getting another weapon? I think it's like
as
it's almost,
wide receiver,
you know what I mean? It's almost imperative that we get another weapon.
Yeah, well, I think it's certainly possible.
You know,
we'll get to that.
I think it's possible, but I had somebody on Twitter say, "Go sign Alshon Jeffrey." You're not putting that type of resources into another wide receiver.
Realistically, based on what your cap allows, but it's certainly possible for them to look at a taller wide receiver, or somebody on the outside. I don't think that's a stretch.
To be honest with you, you know, I think we do need another weapon, but I think if this line was better, I think if this line was actually a good line, you know, I think that we would have the receivers would have had more time to get downfield and get open. I think that it's just sad that Eli had to just snap the ball and throw the ball really quick, like and have no time to get open. Like, so what do you guys think about Cruz? Like, it's a lot of chatter about his contract. It's a lot of talk about, you know, his production. And I'm going to be honest with you. Everybody's production fell. And this is Cruz's first year back after two seasons. Obviously, he's not the same player. But, I mean, Will Tide numbers wasn't probably what they was from his last year. You know, Eli's numbers went down. Beckham, I think either his touchdown or something went down. Yeah, so what do you guys think about Cruz? Like, do you just give Cruz the walking papers, or do you see what he can do with another season under his belt?
Thanks, Mo. Appreciate the call, man. Uh-huh. And the way I look at the wide receivers, I think you're right. I think this wide receiver group is good enough if the offensive line gives Eli enough time to throw the football. And quite frankly, I'm looking to upgrade more at tight end than I'm a wide receiver this offseason, in my opinion.
No, I would agree with you. I think that there certainly is a place for them to upgrade the tight end position. As far as the receivers go, I mean, you have Beckham, you have Sterling Shepard. I think Tavares King is going to get an opportunity.
Showed
to compete
speed, certainly.
Much more next season. You know, you still have a young guy in Roger Lewis. Mm-hmm. With respect to Victor Cruz, I mean, it depends on where both parties want to go.
It's all financials.
Yeah, and whether or not, you know, they see a role for him, whether or not he wants to be here, whether or not they want to bring in a little bit more versatility in terms of size. I mean, it's too early to tell you that, but I do think there's options in the receiving corps right now for them to be more than capable of moving the football down the field. And I go back to the Packers game. Yes, the offensive line was up and down, but, you know, Eli Manning had time to throw the football against the Green Bay Packers. He wasn't being hurried and rushed every single possession.
At least not in the first half.
No, but in the first half, all the way into the third quarter was a competitive game. And it was a 14-13 game. So, you know, I mean, I think when you look at the offensive line, you have to look at a variety of different factors. Also, I thought the running game improved down the stretch of the season. I thought they were much more consistent in terms of establishing some semblance of a running game, which we didn't necessarily see early in the season. But, you know, you saw flashes. You didn't really know what you were going to get game in and game out. You want better continuity. That's what your goal is heading into this offseason.
201-939-4513. To me, you look at top priorities, adding a wide receiver is not, to me, a top priority. I think the wide receivers on this roster are good enough, in my opinion. Dre in Atlanta, he's up next. Dre, how are you, pal?
I agree with you. I don't think wide receiver is a pertinent need for the team. But I do want to talk about, you know, the financial aspect and the possible cuts. Now, in relation to Victor Cruz, first year actually playing a full game, only missed, what, two games with injury?
Yeah.
See what he has. Let's see what he has. After, you know, training camp, see what the body does and see what he does in camp. If he gets beat out, then it's fair and square. You know, hey, someone more talented actually beat you out on the outside and the inside, even though we may need, someone in the slot to back up Shepard in case of injury. But my main thing is DRC. DRC was just a pertinent facet in that defense. I kind of, you know, looked at the numbers, found a way to keep him on the team, you know.
Well, Trey, honestly, I don't think it takes that much jiggering to do it. I mean, the Giants have a lot of cap space they're carrying over from last year into this year. His number is high, but for a player that was an all-pro caliber player, I mean, he was on one of the all-pro teams, I don't think that number is out of bounds. So, quite frankly, I don't think you have to do anything too fancy or special to keep him on the roster, in my opinion. To me, keeping Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie on the roster has to be a priority. You saw what happened when he had to come out of the game against Green Bay, right, Lance?
Yeah, and he's under contract. So, I mean, you don't necessarily have to make room for him on the roster.
I'm talking about past the 2018 that you have him on contract.
Found
a way.
I got you.
I'm talking about past that. You know, he's on contract to 2018. I've thought of a way. With his versatility and his ranginess, you can put him at safety.
Ooh,
and he could be, I'm saying with his speed, I mean, regardless, you know, he may not be the physical aspect, but you can save money.
But why would you want to, Dre, why would you want to put him at safety? You have Landon Collins, you have Darian Thompson coming back from an injury, and you need three corners in this league. So why do you even need
to consider? I'm not talking about this season. I'm talking about after.
But
Landon, if you want to keep him on,
look at the age of Landon Collins and Darian Thompson. Why are you ever even going to need DRC to move to safety?
And like you said, DRC is not exactly Mr. Physicality either.
Right, but what I'm saying is in reference to Darian Thompson, you know, I mean, he hasn't played since week two when he got hurt against the Redskins. And for injury capabilities, yeah, you still need three corners, because I still see we're going to pick up another corner. Or if Dante Dion takes a giant leap this offseason and can actually get on the field as a premier slot corner, then yes, I understand what you're saying in reference to using three, you know, solidified corners. But what I'm saying is, just the same way you use Leon Hall, because I don't see Leon Hall coming back for another season with the Giants.
Dre, I want to say this too, Dre. I mean, you're worrying about what's going to happen two football seasons from now. Who knows how good Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie is still going to be in 2 years? Who knows how healthy he's going to be in 2 years? I think making any plans now for what's going to happen 2 years from now, when for a guy that's going to be then in almost his mid-30s, I think you're honestly projecting way too far into the future in a league where it's really a year-to-year league once you hit 30 years old. I don't think you can worry about 2019 now, when DRC still has 2 years left on his deal.
Well, the reason why I brought it up, because in his argument, I'm saying if he brought it in, because there's definitely, I mean, we have money in the cap, you know, but you have to look at, you know, we have young players on the team, and his biggest argument is, you see what happens when I'm off the field, bad things happen. You know, unless we raise the talent in the cornerback position, so we have some good depth. You know, we had it at safety, and then we lost all the safeties in three games. You know, and it was just Landon Collins with a platoon of different safeties coming in. Now, granted, you know, Adams was a good pickup, but he's not Darian Thompson, you know. And Mikael Thompson, Mikael Thomas, that was a waste of, you know, we don't know what he has. This is his show-me season coming up. So that's the only reason why I plugged that in there. But I appreciate you taking my call, though.
Thank you, Jay. Appreciate the call, man.
Thanks for chiming in.
Remember, you got JPP and Hankins this year. Worry about them.
Yeah, those are the top two
priorities. Then next year, you got Pugh and Richburg. And by the way, then in 2 years, you're going to have Landon Collins, Odell Beckham Jr., and Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie.
Yeah, remember, Justin Pugh, too, you have to take into consideration, too.
After next season.
Yeah, in terms of at least a long-term contract. Mm-hmm. I think there's other guys that are going to come up first before you think about the future. Yeah. And, you know, Dre did throw out some of the question marks at safety. No argument there. But I think by the end of next season at this time, you're going to know a little bit more about Mikael Thompson and what he could perhaps bring to the table if he could stay healthy. Nat Burhe, you're going to know a little bit more about.
And who knows who you bring in free agency in the next 2 years? Who knows who you draft in the next 2 years? I can't worry about 2018.
Yeah, that's why I said, you know, it's hard because, like I said, you're going to have more knowledge about some of the personnel on your current roster to determine, do we want to move on from them? Can they stay healthy? What can they bring to the table? Right now, we only know what we know based on 2016, but I think with another year under their belts, you'll have more to evaluate, and you'll be able to make a better and wise decision.
Jersey Chris is calling from, this might shock you, New Jersey. What's up, Jersey Chris?
Yes,
how are you?
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Jersey.
Happy New Year
Chris.
To you.
All right, as far as the D-back Adams is concerned, he's the only undrafted free agent and rookie that on this team that rated an A. The only one, John. We went back to the 53-man roster. You thought Mikael Thompson was going to be the man. I'm the only guy in the station that said Adams had a shot. You thought he was raw. He stepped up to the plate, and he solidified that back. He's
Jersey?
Not the greatest guy back there, but he solidified
Jersey
himself.
Chris,
and
I will tell you.
He only got an A so far.
Jersey Chris, I agree with you. I did not think if Andrew Adams had to play as much as he had to play this year, he would do as good of a job as he did. I was absolutely wrong. He was much better than I thought he would be. Kudos to him. He had a heck of a year for an undrafted free agent. No argument from me.
Absolutely. Number two, there's a I do like their I do like the idea of Hank as a JPP. I totally agree. That was one of the main conversations the night after the game we lost. Everybody in my circle, we were all talking about it. Reese has to step up here, John. He has to sign both of them. That's just the bottom line.
Well, okay. And he said that, and Chris, he said that it's reasonable that they can afford both. So,
and again, the beauty of it, Lance, and I think this is how you have to look at it, you don't necessarily have to sign both guys to long-term big-money deals. You can franchise Hankins if you want and keep him for 1 year, sign JPP long-term. That'll probably be a little bit easier to manage financially as all these guys we've talked about come up and their contract had to be extended over the next few years. So, like Lance said, Jersey Chris, this is possible. You can do it.
Yeah, that's an option. That's an option. But I don't think JPP is going to go for franchise. I think there's going to be conversations about that topic, and they're probably going to come up with a four-year for Hankins too. Probably JPP in a 12-14, and Hankins probably in the 7-10 range. I haven't looked at all the numbers yet. I need to move on because you're getting to the end of the program.
Yeah, no hurry. Go ahead.
I heard some of the wide receivers internally not happy with the routing, the running the tree, not enough of creativity in the offense. Am I a little off here, or am I on point here?
I have not heard that. Have you, Lance?
I haven't heard anything.
I heard a little bit on the tweets and on the web, et cetera. Okay, something we need to maybe look at.
Well,
as far as the offensive line, and then it's my last point.
Right.
The offensive line is a zone scheme, run scheme. Perkins fits very well in that offensive line. I think we do need upgrades for sure. And you know I'm not a Flowers fan. I think he should be moved on the other side. But with that said, do you think, and I'm not a trade guy, but there's not much available in the draft and free agency per se, maybe some guards. Do we trade for a tackle, John? And I'll take my answer off the phone.
Thank you, Jersey Chris. Appreciate it.
Right.
Look, with the class, trades are really hard in the NFL. They're hard to pull off. They're hard to do. But given the class that's out there drafting free agency, I would be okay with getting a little creative this offseason and trying to make something happen.
Well, you have to understand that the NFL, if you have a quality starting tackle, you're not getting rid of that tackle.
That's,
if anything, you're going to trade maybe one of your backup tackles. I mean, look at some of the offensive line that have been traded in the past. I mean, Jonathan Cooper was traded from the Arizona Cardinals. The guy lost his starting job.
The best guy was probably Clady, right, who went from the Broncos to the Jets last year in a trade?
Yeah.
And he didn't have a very good year this year either.
Other than that, though.
And he's been hurt.
Like I said, you don't find premier offensive linemen being shipped out of town. It just doesn't happen.
The question is, do you need a trade for a premier guy, or would you just trade for a guy that would be average? Because an average at this point might be an improvement.
If you want to do that and you don't want to give up a lot and you want to bring up competition, that's fine. But I think you could do average in free agency.
Yeah, that's true, too.
I don't think you really have to give up a piece to get average. You get average in free agency. So why would you want to give up an asset, especially if it's a draft pick or something like that? I just don't see you getting a tremendous benefit out of that.
Well, the question is now, are the Browns going to shop Joe Thomas?
Well, you know, here's the thing. I've heard Thomas brought up time and time again. He's been there so long at this point. I mean,
and by the way, he's 32.
Yeah, is this going to be the year where now all of a sudden he goes to the Cleveland front office, I want out? I mean, I think that he probably wants to see his career finish up with Cleveland. He wants to see what Hugh Jackson can do. You know, the ball's in Thomas's court, and I just don't see him leaving after all of this time.
I have no idea, to be honest with you.
I'm just giving my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
You would think this is not the first time that he's had an opportunity to explore other options, and Cleveland parted ways with every which way an offensive lineman last year, remember? I mean, they got rid of Mitchell Schwartz. They got rid of Alex Mack. So, you know, they've parted ways. He could have easily went to the front office. Guys, you're getting rid of everybody else. I want to get out of here. Trade me. These are the places I want to go. And that didn't happen. So I'd be very surprised if all of a sudden a 180 is pulled this offseason.
Yeah, obviously that's all speculation, folks. So right now he's the property of the Browns, and that's that.
Correct.
All right, final call of the show. Shakes in Baltimore. Shakes, what's up, buddy?
What's going on, fellas?
How are you?
I'm all right, man. Wow, a lot to talk about here. Y'all touched on a lot of topics here. First, let me say this. This is the reason why I was so critical on Jerry Reese. Because to me, you can't say that he didn't know that this was a problem because he went out and tried to inquire Okung and the guy from the Raiders.
Donald Penn.
Jake Long,
Penn.
Another one.
Yes. So, you know, he wanted to address that issue, but he didn't. And you still had the money to do so, but you didn't. And so that's why I was so critical on Jerry Reese. But let me get off of that. Let me get on this Joe Thomas thing. Now, I do agree that he may want to stay in Cleveland because in the past it shows that, you know, and he come into the media and says, well, you know, I love it here in Cleveland, blah, 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 blah. But you said something. He's 32. You want to finish your career? You may be one of the greatest offensive linemen to play the game, arguably, okay? And you want to finish your career losing every year? You're not going to get acknowledged at the end. When 15 years after your career, they're going to forget you, bro. They're going to forget you. You want to go to a team that is contending, a team that got a franchise quarterback, a team that got a top 10 defense. Joe Thomas, come to New York, please.
Well, the question you have two shakes is what it would take, and again, in this theoretical world we're talking about, what it would take to get him. Now, the reports last year that were out there that were unsubstantiated were either two or five. We talked to our people in Cleveland who cover the team. They said they probably wouldn't part from him or anything less than a one. So there is some debate, too, as to what it would cost to get him. I don't know what that price would be.
Yeah, he also has 2 years left on his contract. And then, remember, Shakes, what you just laid out, I'm not disagreeing with anything you said, but you're assuming that that's the mindset of the player. And, you know, he's thinking about his legacy and being remembered. I don't know. I mean, I haven't talked to Joe Thomas. For all we know, he's content. His family is satisfied.
What else you play this game for, you know?
Well, Shakes, I get that. But what I'm saying is I just don't think you could make the assumption that every player has that
mindset.
Well,
Shakes, remember this,
saying.
Too. If you're a Knicks fan, Carmelo Anthony doesn't want to waive his no-trade clause. He's nearing the end of his
That's
career. The Knicks can't win anything, but he wants to stay here. So it really does vary from, you know, player
family,
to player.
I mean, the family may be comfortable in Cleveland, and he doesn't want to move them out from there.
And that's
I don't
true.
Know.
From what I heard in reports, you know, in recent past, that was the case. He didn't want to leave. He's very valuable in the Cleveland
the community.
Community, exactly. So, the thing about it is, man, y'all made me forget what I was going to say about
sorry that.
That. No problem. But the Cruz thing.
Yeah.
The wide receivers. Now, I think there's room for Cruz, but this is what I think. We do need a big body in that wide receiver core. We need a 6'3 and 6'4 type of dude. I do not think that we have to push out Cruz this year for that. I think if we can draft a guy and develop him and he can also provide in special teams as well, then I think that that's a way to have room for a big body receiver as well as a Cruz. So when you go to four wide receiver sets, they either the third or fourth wide receiver. It really don't matter. Y'all follow me?
Well, I get what you're saying, Shakes, but I think a lot depends on the potential they see in Tavares King. Because if you're talking about, just going with your hypothetical there, if you're talking about keeping Cruz, bringing in another wide receiver, then where are the opportunities for a guy like Tavares King? So if they're satisfied with what King is bringing to the table, they want him to maybe move up the depth chart and showcase him a little bit more, as opposed to now keep Cruz, bring in another guy, then King is the odd man out all of a sudden.
I understand, but also, like, King is like a young guy, and he's like a slot guy. So, you know,
King can play
think...
the outside.
Yeah.
King can play the outside.
Yeah.
He has shown that. And,
I ain't a fan.
I'm not saying King's an old guy, but remember, people tend to forget he's been around the block. He's been with a few teams.
Is it like third season, fourth season?
Yeah, but, you know, he's not a rookie, though. I don't consider Tavares King a rookie, even though he hasn't had a lot of regular season
experience. I say young guy.
Experience.
I didn't say rookie.
No, no, I'm just saying,
but,
I guess people assume that he was an undrafted rookie that just came in, and he's not. He's been with a few practice squads and teams. That's all I was saying.
Tavares King, by the way, just for the record, was in the 2013 NFL draft, so he's been in the league for 4 years.
Yeah. Well, look, I'm a big advocate of Eric Flowers. Y'all all know that I'm big on Eric Flowers. I came on his rookie season. I said he's going to be a Pro Bowler.
Yes, you did.
I was wrong. But
we're all wrong sometimes, Shakes, but you still have to throw the dart sometimes.
You know,
it's okay.
I'm more right than I'm wrong, though. I'm just saying. But, you know,
We love to pat each other on the back on this program, apparently.
Yeah, yeah,
yes.
You know, I always do that, you know. I got to praise myself. Who else going to do it?
Exactly.
But,
words that Lance lives by.
Yes.
But here's the thing. I do think that maybe we have to move him. And I think that we can keep a Jerry and a Newhouse, and that's great depth. And Bobby Hart can get a shot at the tackle as well. But I want to bring in a top-notch free agent offensive lineman. Like, either a guard or a tackle, it don't matter to me. I want a top-notch offensive lineman. Because that right there, that's the piece. That is the piece. Because we went out there and we drafted Flowers in the first round. We drafted Wittsburg in the second. We drafted Pugh in the first round. Okay, we got those pieces solidified. Bobby Hart looks like he's somebody. He's a national champion in college. He looks like he has potential. So now let's get in a top-notch free agent, solidify this offensive line, get a beast running back. And that's my question, my last question for y'all, and I'm gone.
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry. It's been a while, y'all. And I like when it's John and Lance. Y'all the combination I like to come on. But my question for y'all is, we don't have a lot of needs. Like, last year, we can go into, oh, we needed a running back. Oh, we needed a wide receiver. Oh, we needed tight end. We needed offensive line, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This year, we don't have all those needs. Now, let's say we address all those needs in free agency. It's like I said, we go out there and get a guard. And somebody, we resign our defensive lineman, and we maybe add another linebacker and to change that. Now, with that being said, maybe we need a running back and a tight end at this point in the draft. Do you trade up in the first round to get a Leonard Fournette? Do you do that?
No,
I do.
Well, but see,
I want you to be aggressive, Jerry Reese.
Well, but running
please
backs.
Please answer my question.
But Jake, to me, running backs, first of all, they've proven that you could find the guy in the fourth or the fifth round and could have success. I don't think that that's a position where you reach for, considering how injury-prone that position is. They just got Paul Perkins in the late rounds. So,
yeah.
I mean, the Giants have a guy. Ahmad Bradshaw was a seventh-round pick. They've got a pretty good track record where they found guys late in the round. I just don't think that's a position that I would be ultra-aggressive in moving up for. Other positions, I think there's more substance to discuss. Running back is not one that I'm going to reach for.
Yeah, you know, Shakes, I'm with Lance on that. I'm pretty happy with Paul Perkins. If he's my number one running back next year, I'm okay with that. I don't think you have to spend the first or second round draft pick on a running back. And Dottino, I just debated with him last week. He disagrees with me. I would have no problem using a day one or day two pick on a tight end. I'd have no problem with it. I'd be fine with it. I think that's how important that position is to improve this offseason. I'd be okay with that.
Well, I think it depends on how versatile that tight end is, though.
It has to be the right player, obviously. Yeah, I'm not saying pick one no matter what. You got to have the right guy.
Of course.
Well, let me say this, though. I understand that because I'm a huge guy on David Johnson. I was huge on him. I was huge on Duke Johnson. Yes, I know that you can get these running backs late in rounds. I know that. But my thing is, and I love Perkins too. Let me put that out there. But I think he's a complimentary running back. You want to have him carry the ball seven to ten times.
Where he can handle 15 to 16 carries.
Yeah, he could handle it. Yeah, don't get me wrong. I said this in the beginning of the season, y'all, if y'all can remember. I said run the boy. Run that boy. But listen, I think he's a 7-10 carry running back. That would be great. He'll be explosive in that role, right? But what I want is a Adrian Peterson type. I want a Ezekiel Elliott type. And that's why I'm so happy that the Cowboys did draft that guy, and he beasted and killed the league, because now, you know how teams in the divisions, they mimic the other teams and the top teams in their division. And if something is clicking for the team that won a division or they looking up to, they tend to mimic it. So with Ezekiel Elliott doing what he did, maybe it puts the pressure, or maybe it puts it in Jerry Reese's head. Maybe I should get a beast running back like a Leonard Fournette. I'm just saying, LSU, Leonard Fournette, we're going to start these wars. Thank y'all for taking my call, man.
Thanks.
I appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Look, you know, I'm generally against train up, just as a theory. So that's why I look at that.
Yeah, I'm with you. And like I said, if I'm going to trade up, running back is not the first position that I'm trading up for. I think that you can be much more aggressive in positions where there's not nearly as much depth as the running back. I mean, as I pointed out with Shakes, I think Perkins can give you much more than 7 to 10 carries a game. I think that's being extremely conservative. I think he showed that you can give him 15 to 17 carries a game. I don't think that's too much. You do want another compliment. But, you know, to say that, you see what the Cowboys did with Ezekiel Elliott, and everybody's got to do that. Yes, if you look at the teams that are still left in the playoffs, you have a few teams that have one workhorse. The Steelers have Le'Veon Bell, but look at what the Atlanta Falcons have. The Falcons have Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman. I wouldn't consider any one of them a workhorse. They have a nice balance there. And they're one win away from going to the Super Bowl. The Green Bay Packers have gone through about five or six different running backs. They're one win away from the Super Bowl. And New England has LeGarrette Blount and Deion Lewis and a few other guys that they mix and match. So, you know, there are teams that have followed different scripts with respect to the running game. I don't think that there's one way to go about building your backfield, but Perkins to me is much more than a 7 to 10 carry guy. If they want to add some more versatility in the backfield, that's not a problem, but I think they already have somebody that can handle much more of a load moving forward than just perhaps a few carries here or there.
Couple quick tweets. Will the Giants trade up this year's draft like they did 2 years ago when they traded to get Landon Collins? Who knows? Depends who's there. That from Carlos Rivera. Let's see what else we got here. Juan, why do you guys keep defending this offensive line? Eli had no time to throw the ball, and the Giants couldn't run it. Guys, we weren't saying the offensive line was great. We were simply saying that it wasn't all the coach's fault.
And we said it was inconsistent. And here's why I disagree with that statement. You can't make a generality or a generalization when you look at the offensive line, because to say that the offensive line was terrible all season, then you're not looking at what the running game did late in the season. So there were success stories with the O-line, but I said it was Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, inconsistent. That was the problem with the line. But to say that the whole season Eli Manning had no time to throw the football and they didn't run the football at all, then clearly you weren't watching Giants games. I mean, let's face the facts,
but it was
here
a more
when we evaluate the line.
But it was a more consistent issue than any
no
other
doubt,
problem on the
no
team.
No doubt, but to say right that the entire season Eli Manning was running for his life is completely going against what actually took place
right
on the field.
And I also
this
think
season that's what I'm saying.
All the players into one big lump is wrong.
That's
too
the
you
point
have to evaluate
yeah
them as
you
individuals.
You got
to
look at
too
the highs mm-hmm and the lows, and there were a lot of highs and lows. No doubt about that.
More lows than highs, though, unfortunately. Yeah. That's about it for tweets. Keep sending them in, folks. We'll keep taking them as the week goes along. Tomorrow it'll be Lance and Paulie Dotts, and then me and Paul and me and Feagles the last couple days of the week. Thanks for joining us, everybody. For Lance, I'm John. We'll see you next time on Giants.com. Have a good one, everybody.